Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Overserved. I am Ari Bendersky. I am here with my adorable co-host.
Aw, Maggie Hennessy.
You are pretty damn cute.
Hi, thanks. You too.
And as always, we are taking a deep dive with the people behind Chicago's thriving culinary scene. Most weeks, we invite on guests, a chef, a sommelier, a restaurateur, a farmer, or another one of the fabulous people who ply us with all the food and drink to learn more about who they are, why they got into this crazy food world, what makes them tick. This week, we are stepping outside of Chicago. We are super psyched to have Kristen Kish, the executive chef and partner of Arlo Gray at the Line Hotel in Austin, Texas. I happened to eat there earlier this year, and we rode in an elevator together. And she's also the winner of Top Chef Season 10. She's in the hot seat to talk about her career, what it was like to compete on Top Chef, and how she ended up in Austin from her childhood in Michigan. First, though, as with every week, we talk about something interesting that happened, something in the news, and this week we're talking about dinner theater.
Ooh, yeah. Tell me more.
One of those things that you don't seem to think that, you kind of think about dinner theater, kind of cheesy, you know, it's not going to be great food. There is a new production in Chicago called Teatro Zinzani, which came from, I know they're in Seattle and have been there for a long time. I believe they're maybe in San Francisco. I admittedly was very reluctant to go. I thought now, it was going to
so
be...
So you didn't buy the tickets, someone else did?
Yeah, actually, I was invited as a member of the media. I was invited to come in. I rescheduled once because I had a conflict, and then we went this last weekend. I cannot recommend it more. Oh, it was so surprisingly fun. There's every facet of entertainment. There's acrobatics. There's opera. There is comedy. There's a lot of comedy. Like, you laugh the entire time. It's 3 hours. It flies by.
Where'd you see it?
It's on top of the Cambria Hotel, which is in the Loop next to the, it's now the Niederlander Theater. It was the Oriental. And it's in a space that they uncovered that was a Masonic temple back like decades ago. They have this massive tent that they brought in from Belgium that is like 100 years old. It's been restored. I mean, it's super glamorous. There's chandeliers. There's like different fabrics and beautiful colors. And from the very beginning, there is this sense of like controlled chaos. And it all unravels and makes total sense. And you are just literally, you're entertained from start to finish. And the food is done by Debbie Sharp, who is the goddess. She owns Goddess and Grocer. She used to own Feast.
The goddess herself.
The goddess herself. And she's amazing. She's a force to be reckoned with. And the food was fantastic.
Can you tell me how did the food work into the performance?
They would be in lieu of an intermission. So you sit down, you get a little appetizer. Then they bring you drinks. And their wine list is actually really impressive. They've got really high quality wines. And people around us were ordering. Somebody in front of us had a Morgon. Somebody next to us got Pinot Noir from Fela in Napa. And to be able to produce that many dishes, it's like hundreds of dishes, super fast, and you get a choice of 5 entrees. And my husband and I both got salmon. It was perfectly cooked, great flavor. It came on a bed of farro. There was a little sauce, and it was great. So it really played a supporting role to the show. But it was a real great addition to what you were experiencing. And there was one moment where there was an aerial ballerina that literally brought me to tears. So I totally recommend Teatro Zinzani. If you are in Chicago or coming to Chicago, it's going to be around through next year. And go check it out.
Oh, I love this.
Also,
there's so much good live theater here. I think sometimes we forget.
Yeah. So let's talk about granola. Every week we talk about something that Maggie cooked. To remind everybody, Maggie did go to culinary school. She went to
Kendall College.
Kendall College. Mm-hmm. God, I was going to say the Cordon Bleu, but you did not.
No.
That's Kristen.
That's right.
So talk about what you made this week.
So I spend an obscene amount of money on lovely, locally made granola, probably every week. But I realized that is dead simple to make, and it's something I should do more often. And then you can control what you put in it. So I made this like lovely toasted coconut pecan granola this week. And I actually made it for my father-in-law, but I realized like I kind of just made up a recipe. I think it was like around 4 cups rolled oats to half a cup of sweetener, half a cup of grapeseed oil. And then you can really do whatever you want from there, like cinnamon, change up the dried fruits, add different nuts.
Yeah.
coconut flakes. It was lovely. And I think you bake it for about, I baked it for about 20 minutes at 350, just in a single layer on a sheet pan.
It's super easy.
Yeah, add the dried fruit after. Do not bake the dried fruit. Other than that, you can kind of do whatever you want. You can use it over sweetener. You got a little agave syrup in your house, go for that instead.
Delicious. Whatever you,
yeah, but just don't use fake sugar.
All right.
I will hunt you down.
And like last time, you talked about Mapo tofu, and you didn't bring any in, and you could have brought some granola.
I finished the last of the granola this morning. I'll make some and bring it to you next week.
Sorry,
everyone.
So, as I mentioned, we have our first non-Chicago chef who has ties to Chicago. But Kristen Kish, she was born in Seoul, Korea. Adopted as a four-month-old baby by her family in Kentwood, Michigan, which is outside of Grand Rapids. She modeled in high school, and she's actually looking quite beautiful and stylish today, I might say. Her mom, from what I understand, convinced her or pushed her into culinary, and we could talk about that a little bit if I'm incorrect. So she enrolled in Le Cordon Bleu in Chicago. That's the Chicago connection. Eventually moved to Boston, where she worked for acclaimed chef Barbara Lynch at her James Beard Award-winning restaurant, Menton. Is it Menton or Menton?
Monton.
Excuse me. I'm wrong both ways. And the Demo Kitchen Stir before going on to win Top Chef Season 10, the second woman to do so behind Chicago's very own Stephanie Izard. That was in 2012. And then eventually partnered with the Seidel Group to open her first restaurant, Arlo Gray, inside the Line Hotel in Austin, Texas. Kristen Kish, welcome to Overserved.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
We're so happy to have you.
It's amazing to be back.
And you have lovely weather. Finally, June was vile. We're so happy.
I heard. This is lovely. I'm not sweating completely when I walk outside.
But yeah, you also coming from Austin, this must be a nice reprieve.
This is air conditioning. Austin weather right now is literally an oven. And then you spray in some water just like you're baking bread or something. And then it's just this humidity hot box.
Steam injection.
Exactly.
Oven.
Yeah.
Lovely.
That doesn't sound like a fun existence.
So no, I stay inside.
Yeah.
Isn't that, it's almost like you guys have the opposite that we have in winter. Everyone stays inside here from like January to April. Well, now it's like
November
April.
To May.
Oh, yeah, it's getting worse. But I feel like your summer is kind of that opposite. Like people just stay inside.
You either stay inside, you go from air conditioning to air conditioning, or you go swimming in like the city pools, like the, you know, the natural pools that
Barton
we have
Springs.
All around. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
yep.
Lovely.
It is really incredible. You've got, do you have a favorite place to go and dip?
I like to look at them. I'm not a huge dive into public water like that. It's just not. Yeah, I might dip my toe in.
Yeah.
And like swirl my finger or whatever and like pat it on my face. But
cool,
that's
toes.
Enough for me.
Yeah, okay. Fair. What brings you to Chicago, first of all?
I'm doing this amazing thing with McCormick. And so what we're doing is we're kind of traveling all over and
McCormick, the spice company.
Correct. Yep. And doing this thing, it's like these flavor trends, trying to find the next big thing that's going to really take off. And so for Chicago, we're exploring generally cool, which literally and figuratively, but like refreshing and just like this idea of having satisfying, cooling foods, not only to cool you down physically, but also like to cool your palate, reset it. You know, this lovely idea of when you have Indian food, why there's this yogurt and cucumber like situation. It just makes your palate full.
Yeah.
What are some things that you've discovered through your research on cool?
So we're diving into it right after this.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So everything from beverages to food to sweet to savory. I mean, there's just so many different. I mean, when we think about food in general, the idea of temperature and textures and taste, they all go together. And so kind of tapping into exactly what it all means through all of them.
And what are some places where you're going to be going?
So the first stop, we're going to Pretty Cool Ice Cream.
Yeah, that's making me bounce in my seat for
okay,
you.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
So I did a little Instagram stalking, as anyone would, and just aesthetically amazing, beautiful. Like, I love when things look perfect, and it's perfect. It looks so perfect, so I'm super excited to eat them.
So you it's Dana Cree, Michael Siapsek. Their shop, novelty ice cream shop in Logan Square, very close to my house.
Do you know Dana?
I don't. I literally, when I found out where we were going to go, I started, you know, Googling everybody. And then I found their Instagram page and I was like, oh, it's like, it's so well curated and crafted and honest. I'm super, super excited.
Nice.
And what else is on your agenda?
Baobing. Okay, okay, so cool. Super excited for that. Stephanie Izard being a really great friend. Anything basically she touches turns to gold. So whatever, I'll eat anything she puts in front of my face.
So can you tell us a little bit about your about growing up in Michigan? Where you grew up, and then what were some of the early influences on your palate, and what got you into food in the first place?
Growing up in Michigan, I always say my childhood was damn near perfect. It was quintessential. It was amazing. There was, you know, running home after dark and my bike and softball and Little League and eating snow cones and, you know, going to shows and the Civic Center. And I mean, everything about it, like vacations. And to me, it was the quintessential Midwestern upbringing, shucking corn on the back deck and going to Lake Michigan.
That part of Michigan is beautiful too, where you grew up. Yeah.
So loved it. Absolutely loved it. You know, I think outside of all that, as it was looking so perfect, also caused me a lot of anxiety and personal struggles, that I've been very open about talking about.
What brought that on?
You know, trying to figure out who I was and what my identity was. And because you're surrounded and living in this bubble, which you think is perfect or what appears to be perfect and what looks really great, you kind of feel like this external pressure to like also be perfect. And because I wasn't admitting to myself who I was, I was struggling with self-identity and just this whole mess of emotions. It kind of imploded on itself a little bit.
Do you think any of that comes from being adopted?
You know, I think I used to say yes, and I still say yes, but in a very kind of structured way. Mm. You know, I think our entire past shapes who we are, right? Yeah. And so was there inherently something built into me that I don't remember? 100%, I'm sure there was. But I also think it was just the way I was built, you know, and that's okay.
So what were some, in terms of food, has that always been something that was very ingrained in you? Did it develop at a certain point? What was the connection to it, and how did that start for you?
So at 5 years old, I started watching Great Chefs of the World, which is a cooking show on Discovery Channel. Mm-hmm. And it was very camera chef. That's it. And like a lady doing voiceovers. And it was just, they were just cooking, and it was so simple, and it was my escape for an hour out of the day. And it aired twice during the day, once right when I got home from school and once right before dinner. And I would sit up on the kitchen counter with this little baby TV and a little stool, and I'd plop it right up, and you know, you tuck your legs up when we were more, you know, flexible as nimble. young children. And I would just kind of prop myself like a little monkey up on a branch and watch the show twice a day. And it's, I mean, I fell in love with the process and watching and feeling like it was an escape. And then eventually I picked up my first knife at five.
Your mom yelled at you and said, put that down.
Well, so here, my parents worked like normal jobs. So I think my mom, we debate back and forth. She was like, Kristen, don't you make me sound like I like let you play with knives. And I'm like, well, what's worse? You say you knew I was playing knives and let me, or that you were grading papers in the living room and I just picked up the knife. I don't know. But, you know, she just in general allowed me to explore everything about me. And thankfully, the knife block was very dull, like I think a lot of homes.
Yeah. So what I mean, most kids at 5 years old are watching like Sesame Street and cartoons. Like, how did you even find a cooking show?
I don't know. I think it was, I have no idea. I have no idea. I mean, I watched cartoons and I did all that stuff. Like, please, like Rugrats was the jam.
Oh, me too. Loved it.
I don't know. I think I stumbled across it. And what I've realized, because as an adult now, I love watching people make stuff with their hands. Mm-hmm. I love it. That's how I learn. I watch woodworking videos in hopes of one day when I have time and like my retired life, maybe that I literally pick up these tools and I know how to use it, because that's what happened with cooking. And I think I've just always had this affinity for visual things happening and people touching things. Like, I guess it was like
tactile element.
It was like my version of ASMR way back when, you know, like I loved it, hearing the knife and the pots and everything.
Are you naturally a builder and a creator? Do you find that it comes super easy to you outside of the kitchen as well?
I'm just in general a visual learner. My hands have to be doing something. I recently admitted to my family and my mom and dad that I quit smoking, which then confirmed that I did. But I did then say I quit, which is like a really proud thing for me. But this idea of just my hands always needing to be busy, I feel very awkward if you put me in front of a room and I don't have like my cooking stuff or something, and I just have to stand there. That's when weird things come out of my mouth.
Oh my God.
Because I'm very awkward.
This is actually perfect because Kristen doesn't have any tools in front of her.
No, I do see this. I'm moving my hands a lot.
I want weird shit to come out of your mouth.
Right, I know. Now. She can't. I know. Well, she's got that water bottle. Maybe we should just take it away. No.
Also get all the smacking. We don't want that.
So you had this connection to cooking and to chefs from a very early age. Can you talk about kind of, was there any doubt that you would pursue it as a career, or was your family encouraging of that? How did that kind of come about, and what led to the decision to go to culinary school in Chicago?
You know, I think I was an okay student. My mom thinks that I was better than actually what I was, but I think in the moment she also was like, oh my God, my kid is dumb or something. I don't know. I just was not book smart. Math I nearly failed out of. I'm pretty sure my teacher just passed me so I didn't have to like go to summer school. You know, like this idea of like very structured learning in science and math and history, like it just like I heard everything, but it didn't like it did not stick until you started kind of bringing in this element of something real. Yeah. Right. Whether I saw it or whether I heard it, like let's talk about pie graphs and food pie, but not other pie. And like those are the things that I just kind of started sticking to. And so kind of life went on, and I think I just assumed that I was supposed to go to college, a normal university, study something normal, get a stable job that has like a you know, 9 to 5, and I get to wear a power suit, and this is what life looks like.
The path.
Yeah. Exactly.
The quote-unquote path.
Yeah. And I didn't know that there was something beyond that, not by fault of anybody except for my own assumptions and not having the foresight to ask. Mm-hmm. So I started going to school at Grand Valley State University in Michigan, studying international business and economics. After a year, I dropped out. And then my mom was like, well, why don't you try culinary school? You want to go to a bigger city. Chicago is 2.5 hours away from where I grew up. And just you always loved it. And so mom, dad, and me got in the car one summer, and then we went to check out the school, had meetings with all the administration people. And then I enrolled and started.
What was it like coming to Chicago for you? Like, had you been to Chicago before that, or was it your first experience?
So I had been to Chicago with my family as a child. The first time really by myself when I was just turned 18, and it was in those days of where I took pictures,
like with an actual camera?
Like where, you know, there was an agent and I took pictures.
Yeah, got it.
I don't know why I feel like I need to disconnect myself from that. Actually, I do know why. Very aware of there are amazing supermodels that are businesswomen that have their own brands that run these empires. I was just some kid trying to do it because I thought it sounded cool. Sounded like,
so you auditioned.
I would be more popular.
You weren't like discovered in a mall.
I was discovered.
In a mall?
Yes.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
I was 13 then speed up to 18 when I first came to Chicago. I had signed with Elite Modeling Agency.
Wow.
And then, you know, I was in a mall.
God, it's
and at 13. And then I just did like random local newspapers and things like that. Did some runway, air quotes.
Yeah.
And then Chicago
did you struggle with the walk, or did that come easily to you?
I showed up to Elite for my first like big thing with all the other girls, and I'm wearing flip-flops. I had no idea what to do. And they all kind of were like, and I remember the agent, or her name was Shannon Hill, I believe. She was so kind to me. I have tried to look her up once, so maybe if she's listening, I don't know. She was amazing. And she was like, oh, honey. I was also like, I was like just 18. I had no idea who I was. So I struggled with it.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Jeez.
So when did you decide? So were you modeling while in cooking school, or no? Was there a crossover at all?
No. So basically after the whole modeling thing, like I did some things here and there, but school took up most of my time. And then my part-time job was a hostess at the Chicago Chop House.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Have you gone back there for
nope,
dinner?
I'm all set. Yeah. No. I'm like mildly a little. What I remember, in all honesty, and the ownership has changed. What I do remember, I mean, the owners were great. People were lovely. But this idea of me walking up and down the stairs with these businessmen bringing them to their tables, yeah.
I hear you.
Just felt off to me.
Yeah.
And now that I think back to it, like, it was great for college. It was lovely, but right now, like, I can't imagine. There's something that doesn't sit well with me with that.
Sort of that old, an outdated, do you mean, sort of notion or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It was four women hostesses.
Yeah.
One at the front with the male maitre d', and we would just walk people up and down to show them to their tables. And I was like,
yeah.
So you were kind of modeling.
It served a purpose then, not anymore for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually interesting because you, and we'll get into this a little bit deeper, but working in that kind of an environment where you felt, now looking back on display, where it was still like, oh, you pretty ladies, you go do this. But then you got to go work for an amazing chef, Barbara Lynch, who really paved the way, was one of the pioneering female chefs of the last 40 years. What was it like going from a situation where you were kind of on display in your hostessing job to eventually working for somebody like her and then seeing like that you can be a powerful woman in the kitchen and you don't need to have the male maitre d' overseeing the whole thing? Like, right. What was it like for you then? And then how does that translate to what's going on today?
You know, I think back then we didn't know any better. And we didn't have the knowledge and the education and maybe even the popularity of the women running their shows, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, then working for Barbara, here's the thing. Everyone is always on display in some context. It is the nature of our jobs. It's the nature of society. Like, we can't all be hermits and inside. So there is always this thing of presenting yourself, right? And we all care about it. I'm 100%. I'm like, I don't really want to go around looking like garbage every day. But I also don't care what the other people think. So it's more of just like presenting myself where I feel confident.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. When I was on display hostessing and all that stuff, I wasn't a confident person. So it wouldn't matter what I was doing. Right. I just was not confident. And then speed up and Barbara made me realize that I could have confidence in a way that wasn't tooting my own horn, that it wasn't in a way of trying to prove anything. It was just settling into who I was. And so with her, her being obviously this amazing, talented woman who I look up to, you know, that coupled with the idea of that I also was growing up and they just kind of T-boned in a really great way, where life just kind of felt good.
Can you kind of talk a little bit about the experience of working in those kitchens and just kind of, and then what led to the decision to do Top Chef?
You know, I've gotten that question. I think it's a question that is often asked about, like, you know, have you gotten any discrimination in kitchens or like, what does it feel to be like a woman? I don't know. Because I wasn't paying attention. You know, in 20 years when I look back at it, maybe something will come up. But I think in general, when you go into any kitchen run by a man or a woman, you know, so long, obviously, do not berate anyone. Do not, you know, say hurtful things of stuff that, you know, people can't help. But there's always this form of judgment. Like, it is our interview process. It's go in, put your head down and work. Mm-hmm. And you have to earn your respect. Everyone has to earn what they have. Nothing is ever given, nothing is ever promised. And so we are not entitled to anything, whether you be man, woman, gay, straight, black, white, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And so basically at the end of the day, like, you got to take all that off and say, I'm not going to place blame on any of these things. I'm going to go in, I'm going to put my head down, I'm going to work, and I'm going to do what I know how to do. And then through that, we'll, you know, hopefully things will show themselves. And so, you know, I think, you know, maybe I was judged because I was a woman, or like I was given more like BS because I was, but I don't know. I could have been because I was the new kid in the kitchen.
Right.
I don't know. I cannot place blame on anything. So,
but what kind of kitchen did she run and how did that kind of influence you having her as sort of a mentor figure?
So Barbara runs Worcester. It was four women running the show. I mean, 10 seats. It was two chefs and two front of the house. We were all women.
That's so cool.
In a very, very small space.
And what year was this?
2014.
Okay.
And then when I went to Monton, that's like, then I was a minority. Women in the kitchen were the minority. They were in the pastry department. And I don't think by fault of anything. I think it's just who's applying for what. And, you know, by no means is obviously she hiring certain amount of people. So when I went in, I started overseeing a bunch of young men and older men that probably wanted my job.
And you had already won Top Chef at this point. Yeah.
And so whether I was discriminated because someone was jealous or they were like, oh, who is she? Yeah. Like, whatever. You know, it wasn't the easiest of jobs, but it was definitely one of the most eye-opening.
Yeah.
So going back to Top Chef, what led you to want to compete?
I didn't.
You didn't?
No. So little insight. Very socially awkward. I have grew up with anxiety and depression all my life. Very self-conscious. But I'm also now very aware of I'm all these things. And so knowing that I was all those things, saying, oh, I'm going to go on national television and do something that I love and put it out there and someone could possibly say that it sucks. Like, oh my God.
And that probably, it sounds like you're no stranger to a little imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Of, oh, who she thinks she is.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it was just, I mean, I was not, when on paper, you'd be like, no way. Absolutely no way. But Barbara was like, listen, you can do it. And I think the fact that I could just go on and cook, and that's what I did, I think that's what helped me out a lot.
So how did you feel? I don't know what round you got eliminated in. And for anybody who doesn't watch the show, Top Chef is a competition. It's you get eliminated until there's one left and they're crowned Top Chef. And they, however many years ago, introduced, once you get kicked off, it's
Last Chance Kitchen.
Last Chance Kitchen. So how did it feel being eliminated and then going into Last Chance Kitchen and then basically kicking ass?
You know, the whole time, I think I was a little numb. Like, I was super anxious. I was super nervous. It was one
you
of
mean
the whole
run
show.
Of the show.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And so then when
by you're the just sweating for like
it was that whole time. Lack of sleep.
Oh, my God.
So much pressure. Yeah. It was a lot. It was very intense, especially for a young me who kind of was still trying to figure herself out. So, by the time I got eliminated, I was like a little numb, I think.
Did you feel any sort of relief at that point? Or were you like, I'm going to charge
forward? I felt
forward?
Relief for about 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, because also we were standing up there. It was like 3:00 in the morning. I'm like, can someone just go home? I'll go home if we can all go to sleep. Like, can we be done with this? And it was just so much. It was like prodding questions because they're trying to get the full story. And I was like, I had zero fight like that in me. So I remember the car ride from studio to the hotel where I had to go stay. And when I got into bed, I think that's when it all kicked in. Like, I was alone. I hadn't been alone for like 5 weeks before that. I was alone. It was dark and like things just started settling in and I was like, hell no, absolutely not. This is not gonna happen.
I'm not going out like this.
I was like, and more so, honestly, it came from, I was like, I didn't want to be embarrassed. 100%. That's exactly where it all came from. I didn't want to disappoint anyone. I wanted it more for other people than I did for myself, which can be very good, but it also is, if you're aware of it, I think, and recognize it.
But at any point, did it kick into you, this sort of catapulting into celebrity and like how that could, what could happen?
No idea. No idea. I have no idea.
You're the best.
Yeah. I literally, the PR girl for Barbara Lynch's restaurant group at the time literally was like, can you just start an Instagram? And I was like, what's Instagram? Why is anyone going to like want to see my pictures? And I remember literally asking her, we were at Star. I was like, so do I have to follow everyone that follows me? And she's like, no. And she posted my first picture way back when, and I so clueless.
Oh,
I mean, I had not grown up with this. I had not grown up with anybody like that. Instagram was just starting. Like, it was a thing that friends did.
Yeah.
So there was no roadmap to any of it. And I was completely, completely naive to all of it and what it could potentially do.
Going back to the show, what did you What was the dish that you made that got you eliminated? And then what was the dish you made that you won with?
So what I got eliminated during Restaurant Wars, which is probably one of the most viewed episodes of the season.
And
so,
such high pressure.
Yeah.
Huge.
Huge.
So basically I got eliminated because all of my things didn't execute well.
The restaurant failed.
Yes. Because it was terrible.
What was the concept?
Elevated like French. Like I tried to take classic French dishes and then put a spin on it. But I think I did it in a way that was a little too kitschy.
Yeah.
And then I also, and we said it on the show, this idea lived only in my head. And I didn't have the leadership skills to say what was in my head and to then lead. And you're also on TV and you also have 24 hours to do this.
Right.
Like there was all the things. And I was not set up with the tools in order to actually do it in a normal setting. Right. So how would I ever be able to do it in this setting?
Fake it till you make it, man.
Exactly. I was completely, completely out of my league. 100%.
Yes. Well, what a cool thing, though, that you can then learn from those mistakes and then go into the secondary show and then be able to kind of just come back and regroup and say, like, this is what I'm going to do. And then you won. And like that.
It's an amazing learning experience. It sounds like incredible.
Like Last Chance Kitchen, the beauty of it is that you literally go in, you cook for 30 minutes, one dish, and then you're out. And that's all you had to worry about. Like, I'm like, I know how to cook. Like, this is cool. You give me a very large box and I'll make something. And then the whole finale thing. And by the time that happened, I was competing against Brooke, who is one of my dearest friends.
Yeah.
And I think we were just two friends, literally. I mean, nerves, absolutely, and pressure. But it just, I felt at ease, which was really lovely.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So what did you cook? What was your winning dish?
Oh, my God.
Do you remember?
I think it all stopped as soon as the snapper with the uni and the braised lettuce and shellfish nage or something.
I love all those words together.
Yeah.
Works for me.
It's so funny. I think back and I look back at these things that I used to make. I'm like, oh my God, like faceplant. Like
so bad.
You're like, oh, I've evolved so far past this crap.
I'm like, I was trying so hard.
I didn't even know who that person was.
Yeah. I was stretching for something that, I mean, I didn't know. I didn't have a true point of view yet on my food and where I really wanted it to come from. And so I was literally just trying to make everything fancy.
Yeah. But that, I think a lot of chefs kind of go through that. You kind of seem to, there's a period of time where you look everywhere, but in your, at your
exactly.
own, right? And you're like, wait, I can be inspired by this. I'll fancify it this way. But a lot of times it kind of takes a moment to go, hold on, I actually know my own stuff. I have my own identity.
Mm-hmm.
Let me.
Yep.
I want to talk about just was there a moment for you where it kind of kicked in that you were famous and how that changed your trajectory and your view of what success was?
Wow, that's a big question to ask someone like me. I don't think of it any which way like that. It makes me uncomfortable. A little bit when that F word and the celebrity chef words start to get pulled
in. They're kind of dirty words too.
I don't like it. Yeah. And here's the thing. I am aware and grateful for the space in which that I'm put into that box because it has led my life to a really great place. that's hard.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's necessarily always kicked in.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, cool. You like my food? Great. You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, this is a vehicle to meet other cool people.
Yeah.
Like that's my where I'm coming from.
So I was going to ask you, so that eventually led you to where you are now.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up in Austin? Was it, did you want to move there or?
Speaking of being a public figure of some kind, I got a DM. So
slid into your DMs.
The whole restaurant happened. Because someone slid into the DM.
Really?
Honestly. I was in Charleston, standing outside, and all of a sudden I get this DM. And so in Instagram, you have like this main primary places where messages come, and then there's this other one, which I don't.
The secret
I don't
world.
Really, I don't check them often. But I looked at it, and it was this Instagram handle. I love him. We've gotten to know each other to this day, and his Instagram handle is Being Fatty. And it's like food. And then come to find out he's the vice president of food and beverage for Sidel, which owns the Line Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, you have time for a call? I'm like, no. So for the longest time, I literally was just like, I'm going to entertain you, but I'm not going to agree to any of this. Mm-hmm. One, I don't even want a restaurant right now. Two, let alone in a hotel. And three, Austin, I've never been there.
Right. Oh, but what a cool thing for like at that point in your career where you've won Top Chef and so many people who go on the show, all they want is the restaurant
to open a restaurant.
The fame and whatever. And yeah. For you to admit that that wasn't part of your plan mm-mm. yet.
What was your plan afterward?
My plan was literally just doing me and seeing where the next steps all kind of took me and remaining open, because for so long I placed so many expectations in this like roadmap of exactly what I was supposed to do. I think I just rebelled. And then when I had the opportunity where I could literally make my choices and say no to anything and just do me, I was like,
that's beautiful.
And I lived that life for 6 years, and I still would have, but something about this restaurant, I was like, I still, when we opened, I was like, wait, did I, okay, we're here. Yeah, it's actually happening. Yeah.
When did you
God.
Open?
June of 2018.
And can you tell us about creating that menu and sort of the identity of the restaurant? And
it all stems, and the question I think as chefs we get asked the most is, what is your food? And my answer is, it's a story of my life. That's all I have.
Yeah.
One of the most popular dishes stem from my Midwestern roots. And Hamburger Helper, and I basically reworked it into a meatless homemade pasta champignon sauce hamburger.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like I pull things from all of my childhood. A lot of it comes from my childhood.
It's lovely.
Do you have a favorite? Is there a favorite dish that you've got on the menu that you think really?
Speaks to
what you do and what you believe in food-wise.
The muffaldini with the champignon sauce, i.e. my Hamburger Helper, is huge. The crispy rice, which is a mashup of New England clam rolls, Korean bibimbap, and crab fried rice. Oh. Again, think about those flavors.
Yeah.
Right. So there is no Korean influence, but the idea of the crispy rice,
the texture.
That's where I got that. Yeah.
Love it.
That's really, really cool.
And then the lunchbox cake, which is all from when my dad used to pack me my lunches and my sandwich would get smushed. And so I would eat a Hostess cupcake, a carton of milk, and a bag of potato chips. And then I made that into a homemade dessert.
So wait, talk about this lunchbox cake. Yeah. What's in it?
So
I'm so intrigued.
It's basically my version.
And why didn't
of a,
you bring any?
I know.
I didn't bring granola. You didn't bring lunchbox cake. We're failing. 0-2.
The homemade Hostess cupcake, essentially. So it's this really beautiful, like chocolate cake base. And then we stuff it with this vanilla buttercream. And then it's espresso coconut caramel, and we wrap them. So you open it up, you crack into it, pour this milk over it, and then you have little baby potato chips with sea salt. And you just mash it all together. And the best part about the whole thing, it's all vegan. So when you think about your menu, you have to have these staples, right, that you can just kind of send out. No one ever knows, and it's one of the most popular desserts.
Which is one of the things that I think is so great about the way that food has progressed, in that, I don't know, even 5 or 7 years ago, and people are like, try this vegan pastry or eat this gluten-free something. And you're like, I do not want to. But now we've gotten to a point where it's gone beyond, way beyond where it started. And they're delicious.
It seems to me too, it's more now just thinking about it, like more in your arsenal and not thinking of it as a limiting thing.
When I look at my menu, I can literally pick all my vegetarian, my gluten-free, my vegan, even if it's just taking one thing out. Like, before, it used to send kitchens into this frantic tizzy. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Now you look at your menu, you're like, yeah, we got it. No problem.
So how does McCormick tie into what you do at Arlo Gray? Or does it? Are these separate things?
Separate. Okay. Yeah. So the restaurant is its own entity, and then the partnership with McCormick, and like the whole vegan thing, honestly. So the first trend that we revealed with McCormick was vegan Mexican vegan food. And so we explored restaurants in New York City. And again, like these amazing restaurants, non-vegans go to, and you just go in, you have no idea, but all of it is completely vegan. And it's this idea of just
candy.
Exactly. And it's like these places that traditionally like big meat eaters also go. Like it's really cool that they're just kind of, the lines are being blurred a little bit.
So are you crafting your menu that way because it's what you want to cook, or because you know there are more dietary restrictions out there and you want to
be inclusive.
So the story where the food comes from, like where internally, is the first thing. Obviously flavor and execution and technique comes. the other stuff is all like, I don't even think about it. And the whole vegan chocolate cake thing happened because our pastry chef was vegan at the time. And I was like, can you just make me a dessert? And I had no idea. So she presented it and I was like, this is amazing. She was like, it's vegan. I was like, what? Uh-huh. So it was like this huge kind of like, oh my God, I had no idea. And nor was it an intention of mine.
Does it feel weird to you to be now in a leadership role and have people reporting to you? And do you feel this sort of weight of being a mentor now? That's kind of a cool full circle moment.
I don't think I think about it. Think about, like, honestly, we are a family. My cooks are my kids. And I tell them, I had lunch with two of them the other day, and just, it's a family. It's, I know, I understand that, yes, I'm in charge of ultimately this kitchen and this restaurant. But it doesn't feel that way. I hold boundaries in which I know that I am the boss and the leader. But it's just a really just easy, vulnerable, family-driven space.
Very personal.
Yes, it's incredibly lovely. Personal.
It's lovely.
Yeah. How do you deal with the conflict when it arises?
I encourage them to sort it out like adults. There's very, honestly, knock on wood, there's very little conflict in our kitchen. They all have their own personalities. They're all like great, great young adults from ages of 21 to 29, I think I have. And they just, it's just chill.
Yeah.
Like, we do these things at the end of service sometimes during dinner service, and we do the highs and the lows. And it's basically a chance for them to say what they want to say, what their personal struggle was for the day, what their high was for the day, and let's leave it at today and then move on to tomorrow. And so they all know, like, when they're getting kind of a little push in service because they're not executing their job right, it's like, okay, let's step up. And then at the end of the night, we address it, and we all leave feeling like no one didn't do well.
So it's a little kumbaya group therapy.
Exactly.
Do you think any of that comes from the fact that you're in Austin, first of all, which is a cool, cool, cool mm-hmm. city, but also the Line Hotel and Arlo Gray, which are beautiful. I was there earlier this year, and it's a magnificent property. And it sits overlooking the river in Austin. So do you think any of that plays into sort of this zen-like environment that I don't even know if zen-like, it might not be, but
I mean, it's beautiful. And like, I think, no, it truly has to do with each individual person coming in and giving what they want and giving what they have, and also being very open and vulnerable about accepting criticism, praise, compliments. It's this human growth kitchen. Like, I want them to feel challenged. I want them to feel pushed, and I want them to feel comfortable. And they're always like, it's like, it's our work family.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah. And you talked about growing up and having a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that? Do you like take CBDs? Do you do yoga? What is your outlet?
Well, I used to smoke like a pack of cigarettes a day and drink a lot of Red Bull. Don't do either anymore.
Yeah. And Red Bull's good for your heart rate.
Too. Oh, it's fantastic.
It helps calm you.
If you're stressed out, just pop a couple of those.
I think what it is that I'm not going to escape it. And where beforehand, all these things were really detrimental and I didn't channel them into the right way. Yeah. Now what's happening is that now, because I'm admitting to myself, these are the things that challenge me on a daily basis. Now this is where I need to rework it, reprogram it, and push it into a different direction. Like beforehand, my addictive, stressful, like super blah, crazy kind of personality led to, back in college doing drugs and trying to mask everything. And then when I was adult, smoking so many cigarettes and trying to escape in that way. But now, because my perfectionist, anxious ridden self was like, I don't want to get cancer. I don't want to die. Why am I killing myself? And I'm stubborn. I'm like, I'm not going to mess this up. I quit smoking. And so cold turkey, and I'm, that's it. Wow. So it's just reworking the story in your head to like make it go into the other direction.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's actually really helped you a lot in your career and staying focused and being successful outside of the quote unquote celebrity chef moniker that you don't really buy into.
Yeah, I mean, well, success to me equals vulnerable living, self-awareness, and general happiness. That's things that I never thought I would ever have in my life, to be quite frank. And so the fact that it coincided with what looks like this other rise professionally.
Quote unquote success.
Exactly. But That's my definition.
That's beautiful.
That's really beautiful.
Ugh.
Well, Kristen, thank you so much.
I wish we could talk for another hour.
I know.
I'm getting sad.
I know. But as we mentioned, you have to go up to Pretty Cool.
Oh, yeah, which is great.
But before we let you out of the hot seat, mm-hmm. we are moving into our last segment with you called Short Order. Last segment directed at you, I should say.
Yeah.
So this is our quick fire round. We ask you a bunch of questions. First thing that comes to your mind, okay. There's no wrong answers. So what would you be doing if you weren't a chef?
A woodworker.
Who is your hero?
My young self.
What did you have for breakfast today?
Coffee.
Such a chef.
Yeah, really. What movie will you always watch if you stumble upon it while flipping through channels?
Notting Hill.
Oh my God.
So good.
Julia Roberts was my first crush.
Whoops-a-daisy.
Yes.
Do you have a life motto? And if so, what is it?
Don't fuck up.
What song will make you stop whatever you're doing and dance?
Ooh, here. It's not even a song. It's any instrumental with like the beat. So I'm more of a beat person than I am a lyric person.
Do you have an example of anyone?
My new favorite song, which I'm listening to right now, it's called Billy. And I don't even know like the artist. It's like some dance artist person, but it's just like chill. It's got a good beat. And it can make someone like me seem relatively in step.
What is your last request meal? No limitations.
Chicken fingers, french fries, mayonnaise, and ranch dressing.
Oh, creamy fried potato. Yep. What is your favorite curse word? We might already know it.
Fuck.
Yes. Yeah,
that was a big surprise. Real stretch. Time for Sip This. So every episode, we have our last segment called Sip This, where Maggie or I will bring something in. And this week, we have Apologue Liqueurs.
Liqueurs.
It's a fun word to say, but really not. And it's even worse to spell.
I don't like saying it. It makes me feel like
creep. It's a Chicago. I know, right?
Liqueur.
But each one, there's three. It's a Chicago-based company started by, just two guys. Robbie Haynes, who used to be at the Violet Hour, which is an acclaimed speakeasy-type bar in Chicago, and his business partner, Jordan Tepper. They have a couple other people involved, but I think those two guys started it. And it is all local. They work with local farms to source all their ingredients. They are non-GMO. Each liqueur contains a balanced blend of fruits, roots, herbs, and barks. There are three, persimmon, aronia, and celery root. We're going to taste them. I should have prepared this a little bit sooner. They're
what's
incredible.
Aronia?
Yeah, aronia, it's kind of, so I actually had a really delicious like remade Cosmopolitan at this kind of rad bar, Good Measure in River North. And it's, I think it's kind of like cranberry in flavor. It's sort of that tart, but is it like a superfruit? What is aronia berry?
I don't know actually, but I'm going to, each one, aronia, contains aronia berry, raspberry, tart cherry, rose hip, sweet ashlock prune, lavender flower, cinnamon, orange peel, lemon peel, et cetera, et cetera. The persimmon, which they describe as refreshing, vibrant, and distinct, has persimmon, hibiscus flower, bitter orange peel, lemon peel, cinchona bark, and more. And then the celery root, which is herbaceous and savory, as you would imagine, has celery root, cinchona bark, celery stalk, tarragon, fennel seed, aniseed, and more. So you guys are tasting the celery root right now.
I sure did. Tastes like celery root and spicy.
Well, the whole thing.
What would you, have you used that in something?
I did.
Yeah, what is the purpose of this?
What's the purpose of that?
So
that's what I want.
The purpose of these, you can sip them neat or on the rocks, but the whole purpose is really to have, to add flavor to cocktails. And they have a number of recipes on their website where they help you. That one is aronia.
Yeah, this makes me... That's like tart and sweet and a little, what's that like? I can't think of the flavor. That's beautiful.
Ooh, I just had the persimmon. That's lovely. The persimmon reminds me of an Amaro, but with a lot less of the dry, the dryness to it, which I'm not a huge fan of. But this I really like.
Yeah, it does kind of taste like Amaro. I mean, I don't know, I like them.
But I think these are meant to be more like very...
Seasonings,
yeah. And also very bartender friendly, yeah. Where you can add something zippy to your cocktail to give it a little bit more zing.
Another what do you think word. Over there? Would any of these make it onto a cocktail menu for you?
Here's the thing, is that I'm only smelling them. Mm. And they all kind of smell like hairspray. So... Maybe don't ask me, because it just smells like alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah. The packaging is lovely.
The Aronia, I think, is my favorite.
Yeah. I like the persimmon.
Do you know
the
what a chokeberry? That's Aronia. I don't know.
I have never heard of such thing.
It's apparently native to eastern North America, found in wet woods and swamps.
Well, maybe that's why we don't know.
Astringent, semi-sweet, sour, low-level vitamin C berry. Can be baked into breads.
I wonder
well.
If it's going to take off and like we're making frozen bowls out of it next.
I'm telling you, because I did have a Cosmo, like a remade Cosmo with Aronia berry liqueur, and it's probably this, and it was delicious. It was like
was
what...
It somewhere local.
It was sort of like what the Cosmo... Yeah, it was at Good Measure in River North. Okay. It kind of tasted like what... You imagine a Cosmo should taste like before it was kind of bastardized and turned into like a
sugar bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, fascinating.
Well, I know.
If anybody listening is interested in finding Apolog liqueurs, they are available at a number of retailers in the Chicago area, Foxtrot and Binny's, and you can order them online from Binny's. They're at a number of restaurants. Paso Roto, Jennifer Kim was our guest on a recent episode. That's her restaurant. But there's a bunch of restaurants and bars in the Chicago area, but also in New York. And Madison, Wisconsin.
Haven't you had one or two of these in cocktails before?
I have, but it's been a number of months, and I don't remember.
Yeah, never mind.
No, but I think I probably used. They send some recipes,
cocktail
and I think
suggestions.
Yeah, and I probably made something like that. I think I made maybe a margarita with one.
Oh, the Aronia I could see. That one is very versatile tasting.
I think I did the celery root maybe with mezcal and some other stuff, and I think it was. Kind of good. Yeah.
Sometimes
I was going through a savory phase.
Yeah, I've gone through those myself.
Yeah. Anyway, if anybody listening has any suggestions for what you want us to sip on during Sip This, you can email us to overservedpod@gmail.com, or you can just send us nice notes. Yeah. If you have anything negative to say, we don't want to hear it from you.
No, I'm not interested. Kristen Kish, what a pleasure to have you,
thank you
in
very
the studio.
Much.
We had so much fun.
Thank you
for sharing your time and your lovely story.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your time in
thank
Chicago.
You. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. And thanks everybody for listening to another episode of Overserved, where you can tune in weekly, or just if you go through the podcast app, you can just listen to them back to back. You can binge us if you want.
Yes. Bingeable. Yourself on Overserved.
Get overserved on Overserved.
Yes.
And until next time, thank you so much.
Thanks,
we are
everyone.
Out.
Bye.
Dreaming of me before. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Who are you now? You told everyone.
I guess you're.
I guess you knew love is the one. I must have been born yesterday. My heart, it changes its mind like a one-way road. I'll never go, I'll never be. The girl of your dreams, I'm just the girl.